Hello and welcome to the Sens Call-Ups Ask Me Anything. We're very pleased today to have with us Amy Desiel, who's Chief Marketing Officer of the Ottawa Senators, and also Emily Knight, who's the Director of Game Production. Thank you both for doing this. We have a lot of different questions that have been asked from listeners and people on Twitter and people on our forums. They had a whole bunch of questions they want to ask. We kind of put those together. We kind of cleaned up and kind of compiled them into a list. And what we're going to do is we kind of have this broken down into two parts. Today, we're going to be asking questions about logo and branding, community outreach, and in-game experience. So thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, we're super excited to be here, actually.
All right. So first of all, Amy, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself in regards to your educational background and work experience, why you chose this position and what did you leave behind, as well as your day-to-day activities and how that looks like, along with your interactions with Eugene Melnick and Nick Ruskowski.
Wow. You might have to help me remember all the elements of that question. So just a little bit of a bio. So my name's Amy, and I'm originally from Windsor, Ontario. I grew up in a bilingual household, and I think that's relevant just because that's how I ended up in Ottawa, actually, is I was a bilingual person living in a fairly unilingual city. I really wanted to come to Ottawa. I had family here, and when I visited, I was so impressed with kind of the bilingual nature of the city that I knew that when I went to university, it was going to be in Ottawa. So I basically applied to Ottawa U and Carleton. Like, those were my options because I wanted to be in the city. And I ended up at Carleton doing a Bachelor of International Business. And through that, I studied my third year abroad in Mexico and am now also fluent Spanish. So cool. I actually speak three languages. And I use the Spanish a ton in travel. Like, it's been a huge asset. But I started my career in marketing. I was with an advertising agency called Acme Advertising, which doesn't exist anymore, but was the hot agency back when I was graduating. And I started as an account manager and then moved over to strategic planning fairly quickly. And my major account was the National Gallery of Canada. So I cut my teeth on a pretty big account fairly early on. After I left Acme, I went to a company called 76 Design, which was partnered with another agency, a communications firm called Thornley Follis Communications. And 76 was really small when I joined, but it was where I kind of knew the agency side of it. So I gravitated to 76, and they were four people when I started, and when I left, we were upwards of 25 people, and we were the larger segment of the business, and that was really a digital marketing play. It was back in the day when kind of every website was custom built, and you know, we didn't have WordPress at the time. It kind of started to pick up when I left that agency. I actually left because I ended up working on an account, the Ottawa Rapids account, which was the baseball team that was here for a year. I met the owner of that team, ended up hiring me to run their marketing department at his company, parent company called Momentous. And from there, I kind of jumped around. Like, I did a stint in HR, I did a stint in finance, I did a stint in business development. And really, that was kind of, I ended up taking on the position of chief operating officer because I had the marketing side, but then I gained all these other kind of insights into how a business ran. So, and I was the chief operating officer there until basically July 31st of this year. I ended up here because I worked with Nick Ruskowski previously at the stint at Thornley Follis. He was on the comm side, I was on the marketing side. We worked really well together. I had a lot of respect for him as a communications professional, and I think he obviously enjoyed working with me on the marketing side. And so we connected when he started here, and he was like, you know, this is a big challenge, but are you up for it? And I was excited. I had been a season seat holder. We had owned a suite for the company that I used to work for. You know, the Palladium opened in 96, which was a year after I got to Ottawa. So I've always kind of been a Sens fan. My Ottawa experience has always included the Senators. So I was very excited. And I was so excited, in fact, that I moved back from the Caribbean to take this job. I had spent the last 5 years in the Turks and Caicos Islands with the parent company that I spoke of earlier. And I was so intrigued by the, and everyone does say, like, are you crazy to have left? But the reality is, like, you don't, an opportunity like this is just so significant in terms of your career. You don't say no. You just don't. So yeah, that's kind of how I ended up here and what I left behind and the wow. story of my life.
There you go.
Emily, how about yourself?
Yeah, so I've worked here for a long time. I got my start in the company in the year 2000 as a high school student, and I helped out with different foundation and Fanning Community Development events at that time. Went on to do a high school co-op placement with the team and work part-time both on game nights and at the Senseplex throughout university. I went to Carleton and did a commerce degree there as well. And then upon graduation, I was lucky enough to get a full-time position in our Fanning Community Development department. From there, I moved into game production 5 years ago and was promoted to the director of that department this fall.
Wow. On this side of the table, our listeners might recognize our voice. My name's Canuck. I'm here with Pan. We're actually without our third. Cardinal.
Yeah, yeah, I heard someone's sick, and I want to know if he's produced a doctor's note. Because I think the fans on Twitter would also want to make sure that, you know, if you're going to miss an Ask Me Anything production, you better have a doctor's note.
We should get a
little,
tweet
little
that.
Too sensitive.
Did they ask you for a doctor's note?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was a mess.
I'll vouch she was very sick.
Feel a whole lot better, though.
All right. So let's jump in. First kind of topic is logo and branding. We had a lot of questions. Actually, this is the most asked question that came up, and it had very polarizing results. And it's with regards to the logo and the jersey. So overall, there's been a lot of support that we've seen for the O or the Heritage logo, as well as the old 1992 two-dimensional logo. We personally hadn't had any feedback with preference to people that wanted to keep the current 3D logo. So the question is this. Last season, we saw a significant shift to predominantly using that Heritage, the O logo, you know, seen on the website, promotional material, and right at center ice. But this season, it seems to be like a reversion right back to the current, like the 3D logo. Can you tell us why this reversion happened? Any plans for a rebrand? Or if so, you're going to incorporate any local elements into this?
I can tell you all of that. I'm really excited, actually, about the exploration of this topic because it's one of the pieces of what I do that has such a huge impact, right? Everyone buys in. It is your identity. It is your brand, and I'm super excited to be able to actually work on it in likely a significant way in the upcoming seasons. So that's a little foreshadowing for you that yeah, there probably is some change coming. That being said, I think it's really important to go back to the kind of schizophrenic nature of the current brand, which is kind of split between the O and the Centurion. And one of the very first things that happened when I arrived, and I was spoke with Nick about it even prior to my arrival, was we were putting a survey into the market that would test a whole bunch of things from our experience to our pricing to our to the logos to all, we explored a lot of different topics. So I can tell your listeners, I gave you the slide that shows our results specifically with regards to the logo fan preference. And what you guys can help me explain is or show is that essentially the Centurion logo, so basically on the statistics are read that if you're over 100, anything over 100 is more liked, and anything under 100 essentially is less liked. So the number over or under kind of dictates the level of likedness. I don't think that's a word, but I'm going to use it. Or dislikedness. So the Centurion with the general population is actually the more popular of the logos. And that's basically what we decided to base our decision on in terms of the center ice logo and to kind of double down on the Centurion. Because even when you start to drill down and looking at our hardcore fans, our regular, you know, people who attend games regularly, those who are more of a general population that may not attend, but obviously we have a very prolific brand in the market, so they understand it and they know it. Like pretty much across the board, it's the preferred logo. Now, to suggest that it's a runaway winner is a lie because you can see the data in front of you, but it is the more preferred logo. The O, on the other hand, so I'll just, sorry, to go back and just give you some statistics for the listeners. So the Centurion logo for the total segment tested scored 140, and the O logo scored 100. So with our hardcore fans, the Centurion logo comes in at 130, and the O is 140, which is really not that big of a difference. Now, the O is the preferred logo for the hardcore fans, but again, we're talking about a difference of 10 points here. It's not a complete runaway success. So, really, it's a hard nut to crack because if you look at this data, it's pretty evenly split, especially with our hardcore fans who are very engaged with our club, and then even with our regular customers, it's pretty evenly split there, 145 versus 125, with a preference for the Centurion. What I think would be surprising maybe for your listeners is that the 2D Centurion is a 110. So it actually scored for just the general population, just the total results, it scored 110, which is above the O logo. So that was something that I wasn't expecting. But with our hardcore fans, it's by far the least favorite of those three options. So it scored 105 with the hardcore. But yeah, in general, it's just the 2D Centurion just doesn't really factor, and it's really a race between the O and the Centurion. So taking that information forward, you know, the question obviously is, okay, so where do you go from here? And I think where we go from here is complicated. I don't think it's something, it's not, do you just completely do away with everything and say, and I'm not suggesting we're going to do this, just for the listeners, but you know, the one option is like we just scrap everything and start from scratch. Another option is we do variations of each of them. We try and do some kind of a combination. I think that all of those options should be explored, and I think that fans should have a say. For us to introduce a new identity in a vacuum would be, I mean, there's no marketer or brand developer out there that would say, oh yeah, just, you know, make a unilateral decision and who cares what people think, especially with hockey and especially in Ottawa. I mean, it's a tightly held brand. So I can tell you that I think you're going to see an exploration from us. I think we want to get to a point where we really have one core brand that everybody buys into. Do we have all the answers of what that's going to be and how that's going to look and what have you? No, today we don't, but I can tell you we are thinking about it. So that's about as far as the logos are a hotly debated topic, but we haven't set out a here's exactly the course of action we're going to take. Other than to tell you from a timing perspective, the earliest we could introduce a new brand would be the 2021 season. And that's a function of how the NHL and Adidas manufacture, prototype, test, manufacture the jerseys. So that would be the absolute earliest you would see it. So before anyone gets too like caught up in the fact that, you know, will this be next year, what have you, it won't be next year. And again, that's mostly dictated by the NHL. So I don't have an exact timeline, I don't have an exact logo, but I can tell you exploration, yes, and introduction is at least a season and a half away.
A quick question. Can we share this?
I think you can. I don't have a problem with you sharing it, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
go fill your boots.
And the other one was, have you ever looked at, out of curiosity, this is the results from the survey from the summer. What about like merch sales? Has it showed a trend at all?
Yeah. Again, it's super split. But okay. Part of that is, you know, you got to remember, part of that is dictated by what we order, right? Like when we order a whole bunch of O stuff, obviously the O stuff sells because it's what is in store and selected. When we order a whole bunch of Centurion stuff, we sell like, so it's a little bit chicken and egg with when it comes to merchandise. But it is in general, obviously I suspect your listeners will be like, yeah, but online sales would tell you because those aren't based on, you know, stock volumes. But it's split. It's split right down the middle. So we do really have this kind of strong affinity for both logos. Mm.
Now, in regards to those final decisions, are you going to be doing that based on market research? And with that, what role does Eugene Melnyk play in regards to the final decision?
So, yeah, we will do market research. I mean, obviously, we'll use a lot of the research we've already done in terms of what people kind of, you know, again, we understand that what we're looking at is logos, but there's meaning behind the logos that we think is important to people, right? In terms of the historical, and people have kind of told us, we see it on Twitter, but we also see it just in our discussions, like they like the historical aspect. They want to feel like there's heritage in the team. They also, you know, surprisingly enough, kids, they love the Centurion. They don't like the O so much. Like young children have an affinity with the Centurion because he's like a character. So when you look at kind of the challenge of building a brand with younger people, and in hockey and fandom, as you probably know, like that's the holy grail, is if you, there's a statistic out there, and I'm sure someone on Twitter will correct me if I get this wrong, but there is a statistic out there that the logo or the hat, it's expressed in this way, but the hat that you are wearing when you are 9 years old, there's a 95% chance you'll be wearing that same team logo when you're 50 years old. So building fandom with younger fans is incredibly important. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, I look at it and I go, well, there's an element to that, you know, there's a relatability to that Centurion that we may be able to conserve that is important. There's the heritage. There's all these values, right, that we need to make sure that we pull into the new process. So that's number one. And then number two, in terms of like the actual market research, so there'll be two things or there'll probably be two things. We'll definitely do focus groups. So we'll do them with kids. We'll do them with, you know, teenagers. We'll do them at kind of every phase of life. And we'll do them with different levels of fans. So different people who have different engagement levels. So we won't do this with an eeny, meeny, miny, mo. That's number one. And then number two, in terms of the involvement of Mr. Melnick, you know, he, in the discussions that I've had with him on brand, which have been pretty numerous, actually, he's been one of the ones that kind of been the most progressive in terms of saying, like, let's explore, let's see where this can go, let's, you know, how do we integrate these two? So, you know, whereas I was probably a little more cautious coming into it, not wanting to mess too much with the brand, he's really been the one that's saying, you know, let's really do an exploration here and see what this can be. But at the end of the day, you know, he's going to look at the data just like the rest of us are going to look at the data. And he may not love the logo that ultimately is the winning logo, but he's going to recognize that in the data, you know, if the data shows that there's a clear winner, then we go with that one. That being said, it is his business. Like if I had a store, I'd pretty want to have an opinion on the logo on my store. And this is so much bigger than that. So, you know, he won't not be part of the process, but he's a businessman. I mean, he gets how this impacts so many aspects of the right. business and the revenue. You know, the reality is a new logo would probably do great things for our merchandise sales. That's not lost on me or him or anyone else. But we can't just introduce a logo for merch, right? It can't just be a, hey, let's push some merch. This really needs to be a well thought out, well intentioned kind of identity for, you don't, an NHL team, you don't switch your identity every 2 years, mm-hmm. right? Like this has got to live and breathe and become something that people, you know, it's got to become motherhood. So that's not a decision you just make off the cuff.
Okay. Switching topics, we have a few questions on community outreach. To start off, what strategies do you have for reaching outside kind of the traditional market to expand the Senators brand, and how does your community involvement work into this?
So community involvement, I think what the asker of this question, if I can be so bold as to kind of make assumptions, is kind of talking about is two things. One is like the community in terms of not-for-profit and potentially the foundation and how we influence community building. And then I think the other part of the ask is about different market segments or different I don't want to call them market segments. That sounds so – I'm losing the – I don't have the word. But different I don't know. You guys help me out.
There's community diversity.
Yeah, diversity. Yeah, like, you know, like obviously women, the LGBTQ community, you know, my visible minorities. We have a number of communities that really need to be kind of brought under into the tent that we don't. Well, and I don't have the history necessarily, so I don't want to say we don't do it. And this is where Emily can shed some light. But let me tell you first about the second part of it, because I think, you know, if you guys want to know a lot more about what we do in the community and how we invest our dollars and all of those things, like, that may be a good conversation for Danielle. I can certainly comment on it, but Danielle Robinson, who runs our foundation, I'm sure could go on forever about this. As just a top line, the SENS Foundation has contributed over $100 million to the community, and those usually are supporting areas like mental health for youth,
recreation
development. We also have some other some efforts that go towards minorities, like especially up in the north. We have a program to bring hockey up to the north. So but on the other side of it, you know, I don't think it's fair for me to sit here and say we're amazing at doing this, we're amazing at reaching out to kind of these diverse communities. I think we've been good, and again, maybe Emily, you can talk to a little bit to what we've done in the past, but then I can maybe talk to what we might be considering in the future, like this year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So we've had a number of different initiatives in the past. Certainly different initiatives for, you know, people getting into hockey that have maybe some physical limitations. A lot of our players have been involved with the Condors and other similar groups in the past. Like Amy mentioned, we have different programs that are bringing hockey equipment up to First Nations groups in the north. Also, we have the Little Sens has been a really popular program, which kind of removes some of the barriers by offering low cost for children to start hockey. So it gets people involved in hockey that might not otherwise have the chance,
or
it might cost them a lot.
Well, we contribute the equipment, right? And then there's a small
It's in conjunction
fee
with
the
NHL.
The
there
lessons.
Is a small family or a small fee to the parents for lessons and for the equipment. So I'll have to double check. I think it's $109 for lessons and equipment, which is
for like 12 weeks. I think it's about 12 weeks of lessons. So, and obviously the kids that benefit from that the most are usually new Canadians and those who just haven't necessarily been exposed. We know that a lot of new Canadians use hockey at the adult level and the youth level to connect with their community, right? It's a great way for kids to get active, for them to get involved, for parents to meet other parents. For coworkers to kind of understand the culture and have something to connect with over at the water cooler. So those programs are important, especially like Little Sens is a really nice initiative.
Yep. And over the years, we've had different initiatives to bring new Canadians to a Sens game. You know, we've had probably a full section at different games. Everyone in the whole section is at their first NHL game, so it's something that was really special.
So we also have, just to add to that, we have a hockey, the league actually spearheads an initiative called Hockey is for Everyone, and it is this year, I don't know in the past when it's been, but I suspect it's right around the same time, so this year it's the month of February. So in the month of February, you'll see us do a few different things. Some of them are in the works, so I don't want to kind of promise specific involvement by specific groups because they haven't said yes yet. But I can tell you there will be a focus on, there will be some kind of activation with the LGBTQ community. There will also be an activation with some visible minority groups. And then the one that I'm kind of most excited for, actually, and Immigration Canada is going to have to do it now because I'm saying it on this podcast, but we are planning on February 28th to host the Canada's largest citizenship ceremony for new Canadians.
Mm, wow.
So right now the number's looking like it would be north of 1,000 people. The majority of the actual ceremony would be done either here in the building or at some other location, but then they would join us for their first game. And if you've ever been to a citizenship ceremony, the very final pieces of that ceremony are you take the oath and you sing the anthem for your first time as a Canadian. So we already sing the anthem. So we are all going to, as a community, sing the anthem for the very first time with 1,000 brand new Canadians. And we will also invite all of our fans to say the citizenship oath with them if they would like to, as they kind of finalize that. So I'm really excited about that initiative. And
sounds
as
awesome,
I say, Immigration Canada's pretty excited about it too. And if it if it doesn't happen, I'm going to feel like a real jerk.
Well, that's on them.
But I really do. I know it's like we're working on it pretty hard, so I can't imagine it's not going to happen. But yeah, we're really excited about that one. But again, I'll go back to the fact that, if your listeners have groups that we should be talking to or individuals or ideas, one of the main tenets, I think, of my involvement with the senators has always been from the beginning. It's been 4 months, so it's not a whole heck of a long time. But is, like, we're not trying to dictate what should and shouldn't be. I really view my job as being a vessel for feedback and dialogue and discourse. And if your listeners are listening and they're like, hey, I really know, like, this women's sledge hockey team that would love to have, an opportunity to connect with the team, like, let us know, because we would love it. There's no one sitting in here saying we need to be less diverse. We all know that we need to be more diverse and that there's lots of opportunities for that. But, we need our community to help us kind of create connections with, we're doing a lot of it on our own, but by all means, if you got a suggestion for us, like, I'm all ears, and we're excited to do them.
That's great. Actually, one of our next questions actually is challenging that a little bit. This is over the summer. It was noticed that over the summer there was a visibly insignificant exposure at the Ottawa Pride Parade on behalf of the Ottawa Senators. Also, zero management exposure at the Can't Dim My Light Walk. And as well, there's a cutback on the Sens hometown tour this season to 4 stops. I believe the previous season it was 12 stops. So I guess the question is, why was there a reduction of this exposure? And it seems to conflict with, the desire to increase the community presence.
Yeah. So Emily and I are going to split this one because she knows a little bit more about one part of it. And I know a little bit more about the other part.
Yeah, I'll speak about Pride. I was there on behalf of the organization with our small but spirited group that was there. Obviously, it is in the summer and most of our players are out of town, as well as our ability to kind of ask them to participate in things. So there was no players involved, but there were a few members of the management team and as well as our part-time team. And of course, Spartacat was there. I think it's something we definitely want to look at in the future, and hopefully, more players are around, because I know that is important for people to see them being supportive. But yeah, it's a great time. I always have fun. I've walked in it with the Sens for the past 2 years and have friends in that community. So it's definitely something that I think will continue to grow.
And then on the other piece,
Can't Dim My Light.
Thank you, Can't Dim My Light. I was going to mess that up, and I figured I would rather just not say it than say it wrong. So the Can't Dim My Light piece, so first of all, that wasn't – it was a personal initiative by Eric Carlson. He didn't do it as a member of the team. He did it on his – as a personal initiative. So that's number one. So, but number two is to say that there was no visibility. So first of all, Pierre Dorion was there. And also Brian Morris was also there. So people who were connected to him individually as a friend or a colleague or what have you, and made their decision to go and participate, on behalf of the organization, but also on their own personal behalf. But there was a presence of people there, and I think it's a misnomer that we weren't participating. And it was also, it was their initiative. It's not a time for us to kind of rah-rah brand marketing, we need to show up and to support and be part of it, but it's not an opportunity for us to gain exposure, and it definitely shouldn't have been taken that way. It was an opportunity for people who were close to Eric to support him in the way that they chose to support him. So that's that one. And then the third part of your question,
hometown tour,
was about hometown tour. So hometown tour, Hometown Tour is a sponsored program, and actually was the decision between both Canadian Tire as well as the Senators to just reduce the number of stops and to keep it mostly to the outer region. So areas that don't always have as much access to the Canadian Tire Centre and to the Ottawa Senators. So, Brockville, Cornwall, those were the types of places that we wanted to focus on. And we felt that if we did 4 stops in those outer areas, that we could do them a lot in a much better fashion. And it was also just in keeping with kind of the objectives of Canadian Tire for that program. So it wasn't a unilateral kind of, we don't want to be involved in this. It was really just about, between Canadian Tire and ourselves, we felt like the previous tour was too many stops. And it required too many resources ultimately, and we wanted to focus just on kind of the outer areas.
Vous avez indiqué publiquement que vous voulez faire plus pour attirer les francophones des deux bords de la rivière des Outaouais. À cet égard, quelle réflexion avez-vous à faire par rapport à ces deux communautés et concrètement, que proposez-vous faire ou proposez-vous faire pour apprivoiser les franco-ontariens et franco-ontariennes, ainsi que les Québécois et Québécoises?
Bon, ça, c'est vraiment une bonne question. Je vais répondre en français, vu que c'est une question en français. Je pense que c'est la première fois, je sais que c'est la première fois que deux des postes à l'exécutive sont des personnes bilingues, Nicolas Ruskowski est bilingue français et moi je suis franco-ontarienne. Et aussi, nous faisons un plus grand effort d'embaucher plus de personnes bilingues sur nos diverses équipes, mais spécifiquement sur notre service à la clientèle pour que un partisan en français peut avoir son service en français. C'est très important. L'autre chose que nous avons fait, c'est que nous avons donné un mandat à un de nos membres, un membre de notre équipe, lui donner le mandat. Il est Québécois, mais il est très branché à la communauté franco-ontarienne et aussi aux Québécoises. La communauté québécoise, nous lui avons donné le mandat spécifiquement de faire... de se charger du marketing pour les francophones. Alors, notre approche dans le passé, c'était de faire une traduction de nos messages ou de nos événements. Et maintenant, nous avons quelqu'un qui regarde aux messages et qui fait pas seulement l'adaptation, ça c'est une partie, mais fait la création des messages spécifiquement pour le marché francophone. Ça, c'est une partie, c'est le personnel, c'est très important. La deuxième chose, c'est que nous avons, cette année, nous investissons plus cette année dans nos médias francophones que nous avons fait dans, je ne sais pas, parce que je n'ai pas l'histoire complètement, mais je sais, comparé à l'année passée, on fait plus grand investissement. Alors, Radio-Canada, Énergie et Rouge, nous parlons avec quelques nouveaux partenaires que nous n'avons pas, que ça fait plusieurs années. Nous avons RDS, Unique FM. Alors, nous ouvrons beaucoup plus de portes et nous avons beaucoup plus de conversations avec les médias francophones que nous avions avant. Alors, ça, c'est la deuxième chose. Aussi, nous savions que le marché francophone, il y a beaucoup de jeunes francophones. Et quand je dis jeunes francophones, je dirais c'est des jeunes familles et aussi des jeunes milléniaux. Alors, nous avons préparé des programmes cette année. Je pense que ça commence cette année, mais nous allons faire beaucoup de progrès durant cette année et l'année prochaine en vue de grandir ces programmes. Alors, avoir des expériences pour des familles qui sont accessibles, le prix est accessible, la bouffe est accessible, et juste de leur encourager d'avoir une expérience famille et aussi d'introduire plus d'espace social parce que nous savions que les jeunes francophones, les jeunes en général, mais les jeunes francophones aussi, ils viennent participer au hockey pas juste pour le sport, mais ils viennent pour une occasion sociale. Alors, nous avons des choses comme Fan Deck, le nouveau Hard Rock Bar, aussi le Coke Zone qui a toute une partie maintenant qui est plus sociale. Il y a un bar qui est licencié en haut dans le Coke Zone et ça, c'est la première fois cette année que c'est licencié. Alors, nous introduisons plus de ces expériences où les jeunes peuvent venir et se divertir dans un environnement social plus que juste de s'asseoir dans un siège puis regarder une joute de hockey. Mais je veux réinforcer que C'est un commencement. Nous savons que les francophones sont très engagés dans le sport de hockey. Ils sont plus engagés que les anglophones même. Ils représentent une plus grande partie de ce marché. Et c'est important pour nous que nous sommes vraiment, dans la Ligue nationale de hockey, nous sommes vraiment la seule équipe qui est bilingue. Alors, vraiment, la Ligue considère les Canadiens comme étant francophones et tous les restes des équipes canadiennes sont anglophones. Mais nous, vraiment, nous représentons vraiment une... Et nous présentons dans notre production de joutes vraiment une expérience bilingue. Alors, c'est très important pour nous. Et aussi, ça représente notre ville. Notre ville est très bilingue. Et comme moi, c'était mon... J'étais attirée au marché pour le bilinguisme. C'est important pour moi de continuer de grandir ces programmes et nos partisans dans ce marché.
Parfait. Là. Many professional sports leagues and teams are making better strides to incorporate women into off-ice experiences with players, theme games, clinics, game day experiences, and other things as such. As well, other teams have run different cultural heritage nights. I think we've already kind of
I would kind of say, yeah, we're probably not doing as much there as we probably could. I would love to, and again, it's not for not wanting to, it's just we haven't, either we haven't had the time or we haven't had the resources or no one's really reached out to us to kind of say, hey, like, I have a connection here, let's make this happen. So we're super open to it. We want to do more with women. I think you're seeing, you have two women in senior management positions sitting here today. So there's obviously no one's shying away from women's participation in this, in our game, but we've had, I'll be candid. Like, we've had a few things to deal with this year, and we're getting to it. We're definitely getting to it, and it's important to us. It's very important for me in particular, and I'm sure for Emily, to increase women's accessibility to the sport and their participation in our game at the NHL level. Just be a little bit patient, and we're gonna get there.
Okay, so let's talk in-game experience. This season, there was a highlight video at the Sens' 1,000th home game. Now, surprisingly, Erik Karlsson and any of his plays over the 9 years he was with the Sens didn't show up on the video. Similarly, on some of the welcome back videos we've had, like for Mike Hoffman and Derek Brassard, Erik Karlsson was cut out or hidden from those highlights. I mean, one of Mike Hoffman's most famous career goal was a breakaway versus Boston in the playoffs, which was from a glorious breakout pass from Karlsson. And it was the same thing with Bob Cole's congratulatory video recently, where one of the best calls Bob Cole made was a result of a Karlsson play for Brassard goal, again, versus Boston in the playoffs. Why is the greatest player ever to put on the Ottawa Senators jersey been ignored from these videos and not shown to the fans?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a deliberate choice that we made to kind of not shine a light on Erik Karlsson in any of those videos. All the videos you're mentioning all took place before December 1st, which we kind of earmarked as a point of closure on Erik Karlsson. And so leading up to it, when we did the Mike Hoffman video, we wanted it to be about Mike Hoffman only. Same for Derek Brassard. We wanted the Derek Brassard's welcome back video to be for Derek. As far as on our 2000th franchise game, we just wanted to focus on the historical moments. So that would be, alumni players and also on the players that are currently with our team. So that was the focus on that night. And, we're not oblivious that Erik is a great player, was a great player for us for many, many years. But we also know that wound is still very fresh for a lot of our fans and didn't want to rub salt in that wound by highlighting all of his great plays on some different moments.
And so by ignoring it, that would not rub salt in the wound?
It wasn't really ignoring it. It just was highlighting other things. I mean, for obvious reasons, we're not going to put Erik Karlsson in Mike Hoffman's welcome back video.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly. Song 2 by Blur has been used as a goal song for a couple of years now and has been a great tradition over the playoffs. Is there any appetite to change and or update the goal song? And if so, who's involved in the decision-making process? Has there been any interest in having a local band write an original goal song for the Sens, similar to what Simple Plan did for Montreal?
Yeah, we get approached from time to time from local bands and things like that with different ideas for goal songs and things like that. I haven't come across anything that I think is good enough to replace Song 2. I have obviously lots of great memories with that song over the years, hearing it when some of the great Ottawa Senators goals were scored. But that being said, it's not bulletproof. It's not immune from change. And it is something that we kind of do talk about all the time. But it, for now, I think it's safe, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be our goal song forever. You know, there's been times in the past when we had specific goal songs for specific players. There's a lot of issues logistically with making that happen. The person on the trigger has to know who scored the goal, and as you guys know, those goals happen fast sometimes, and we get it wrong from time to time, and it's not ideal. I don't think that's anything
we'll go back to. Just to underline, it's not really with regards to the song necessarily, but it is important for us to start to kind of reintroduce the idea of team into our just our vernacular, and not that we all know that the Ottawa Senators are a team, but you know, Chris Neal often talks to a lot of our fans and a lot of our supporters, and one of the things he says which really resonates with me personally is like, it's not about the name on the back, it's about the logo on the front. And you know, we're talking about one song, but I think it does point to kind of just making sure that we kind of show some solidarity in some of the pieces that we're putting forward, and making sure that it's about a team celebration, and that celebration can last beyond a player if need be. Like, it really is owned by the fans as opposed to owned by the individual. So that would be one of the considerations that, you know, I would think when we're coming up with a goal song or an alternative, if we were to ever consider one.
Yep.
Yeah, just to add into that too, because just through our experience, and I've been to, I think, 19 rinks now. Mm-hmm. The best goal songs and the ones that will get a lot of traction seem to be those that integrate the fans into the song.
Like a sing-along type?
Pretty much, yeah. A lot of call and answer stuff that happens. So. Yeah. So just a little
bit. I was at a Florida Panthers game recently, and I thought their goal scoring ritual was kind of cool, where they hoot. They go like, hoo, 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 after the... And I thought, you know what? It was kind of a fun... It was like their own ownable sound. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to suggest that that's not something we would want to create is not true. But it just... I think it would be cool for us to look at kind of more ways to incorporate audio and kind of back and forths with our fans.
What does a senator do when he gets celebrated? Is it, he's happy? Is it here, here? He bangs the table? The coyotes, they howl. And I don't know. What does a senator do? That's a good question.
Well, it could be like the sound of a gong sound hitting the shield. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. If anyone has any suggestions,
we have a shield.
Let us know. I like that. I wasn't here for it, but I do know that it's...
I will say, though, again, and this is one thing, the Ottawa Senators are not Centurions.
We're aware.
Yes.
That's a biggest problem.
No one's ever pointed that out to us before.
I know, but so it's much. Just like, it grinds my gears.
Wow.
But...
Okay, noting, next question, kind of noting that the intermission games have been updated this season. DJ Prosper has been a great hit. It appears that the clubs changed up some of the pump-up songs that they do, like, you know, the pump-ups by things like Make Some Noise, Everybody Clap Your Hands. How do you plan on keeping things fun and fresh moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, Prosper's been a great addition, and I think we're going to continue to do things like that. And, you know, his first night, we didn't know how it was going to go and how well it was going to be received. I had a hunch that it would be good, and it, you know, surpassed my expectations. So yeah, we're going to continue to try.
It's hard
things.
Though, too, right? Like, because one of the things that Emily and I talk about too is not burning him out with the fans, right? Yeah. Like, not allowing it to get stale. So it's important that you kind of, you gauge the fan reaction, and you see, you know, every time we run him, we kind of gauge the reaction that we all kind of receive. And it's like, people are still really buying into him, and there's other things, you know, that we want to look at. Like, if we can get 4 or 5 or 10 of those things that people really buy into and kind of mix those, mix and match those, I think that we've seen, you know, a few of those this year. And again, from the time I started, and this was something that Emily has always bought into, kind of because she started her new position at a similar time, and it was like, we're going to try some things. Like, I'll be honest, we dropped the beach balls on opening night, and that went wrong. So, but I will maintain, I promise.
They looked cool.
They looked amazing, but they hurt some people, so we're not going to do that again.
Not that badly.
No, I know, fine. I know. I'm exaggerating. But they knocked over a lot of beers. That they did do.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm never going to apologize for experimentation, because I think that the fans want different experiences. They don't want to come to a game that is the same every single time. And, you know, you can't, we could, it's very easy for us to look around the league and implement some of those things. And though that's absolutely something we're doing. Like, I was in Tampa Bay and loved their game production, and I thought they did some really cool things that Emily and I have talked about. But we're going to try some things that also other teams aren't trying, because if you're ever going to be innovative, like, you've got to be the first mover on some of these things. And I'll never apologize for trying something and having it not work, as opposed to just not trying. Not trying, to me, is not an option. So, that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. And we'll take suggestions.
There we go. All right. So, in-game promotions, so power plays, 6 goals and a win, which I still get in trouble from your colleagues when I...
The pizza goal?
Tweet out pizza after the 6th goal. But anyways, so all of that stuff has been either eliminated or scaled back, where only one row wins a prize for the power play, mm-hmm. Versus everyone in the crowd. So would you consider expanding this back to the whole crowd as a way to get everyone engaged? So, for example, in Dallas years ago when we went, if Dallas scored a goal in the 3rd period, everyone would win a burrito, I think it was.
Yeah.
And people are just yelling out for burritos.
Del Taco, yeah.
So, as I'm sure you guys probably know, and I'm sure your listeners know as well, that all of those are sponsored. So those are usually activations that we do. We don't like the burrito at Dallas.
Yeah.
Was Dallas didn't buy the burritos. They were partnered with a burrito company, just like we're partnered with McDonald's for our, if we score first, you get the free fries, et cetera. So we really have to work with our partners to figure out what it is they want to do. So would we expand it? Absolutely. But we are, again, it's a program that's created in partnership with another brand. So we don't have 100% control over it. And we obviously make suggestions and what would work best. But, you know, we have to, if someone is a partner with us, we respect what they want to do and give them some guidance. But we are a little bit at the mercy of what they feel is best for their brand.
All right. Next question is about online and digital fan immersion. Now, during the game, it also becomes fun for those in attendance to maybe have some sort of interaction that way. That being said, and this has been a common complaint that we have a number of questions on, there's no public Wi-Fi through the building. Is this something that can be added or even charging stations?
So let me deal with the easy one first. Charging stations, yes, we totally could add those.
We have a few, though.
Yeah, but not enough. That's my opinion, because I feel like I don't know where they are, and if we had enough, I would know where they were. we should totally be expanding the number of charging stations, and that's something I wrote on my list to let's be.
I believe there's one at the Bell Fan Zone at Section 201, and I believe one outside of 214. I think there's another one.
So that's the easy one. Yes, let's do that. The Wi-Fi is harder, and it's harder for a really boring reason. And it's because our building is concrete, and it's hard to expand Wi-Fi on a consistent level throughout the building. It's not impossible. It's totally doable, but it's a major capital expense. And we're just looking at where that makes sense. And obviously with things like a downtown stadium being in the mix, making those types of investments in terms of when they would be made, or you know, if we're building a new building, or, you know, there's a lot kind of playing into it. So it's something that gets talked about a lot. And it's just a matter of I don't have a solid, we're doing it or no, we're not doing it. But it's something that we always are considering doing. And, you know, maybe you'll see us do it sooner rather than later. We have a couple partners that are corporate partners that are looking at potentially working with us on expanding that. But we do know that it's a common complaint, and I get it. You know, we would like to also expand things that we do on Wi-Fi in the building. So things like in-seat ordering on an app, and, you know, there's real opportunities for us within the building. And the fact that we don't have Wi-Fi is a limiter. But it's a complex decision, unfortunately. I wish it wasn't, but it is.
Has there been any thought in regards to improving the experience of entering the building, especially on a cold winter night? Any entertainment that would be helpful, for example, pregame radio or music playing in the lobby and outside the entrance, or patio heaters near the entrance to keep people warm?
So I can, I'll talk about that. I guess I wonder if really the entertainment would cut it, because I got to tell you, I've been outside when it's really cold and I wouldn't be standing out there. So we did two things. We did one thing this year. We added two new entrance gates. So they're gate 4 and gate 5. And so that was done specifically to help people get in the building faster, because we knew that especially once higher security protocols were introduced at the league level, that people were standing outdoors longer. So we wanted to decentralize that entrance. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I would love to hear if people like this idea, because it's an idea we're throwing around, but it's about expanding the lobby, the entrance at gate 1, and pushing it out to make a much larger kind of, I'll use the word promenade, but I'm not sure that's,
you know, like an atrium,
or vestibule,
maybe?
Or atrium, or what have you. So that's a consideration that we're looking at right now, is could we bump out that area so that essentially it would allow for more of a holding area, and obviously make it kind of an entertaining zone where you might be able to get a drink or a hot chocolate, or, you know, do some activations with fans in that area while they wait to get in, to kind of get them in faster. Because personally, and as much as it's a bigger project, I really not sure that entertainment and heaters out there is really going to cut it. Like, I think you're just throwing like band-aids on a gaping wound that I don't know that's going to cut it. If we could try it and maybe it would, but I have a hard time believing that a heater outside is really going to keep up with the Ottawa winter.
You mentioned gates 4 and 5. Are they open to anyone?
Yeah.
And where
they're
are they
outside,
located?
They're outside of, so I know where they are located inside the building. They're outside 103 and 113.
Yeah, so they were previously like exit onlys. So we didn't do any construction or anything like that, but people can come in those entrances this year.
Very cool. One of our last questions here, food diversity options. Have you considered anything different? The arena has 3 or 4 restaurants right now, which are pretty much the same menu. Is there a chance to support local brands in the arena? Things like Big Rig as a brew or restaurant, craft beers, etc. Can there be any promotional or discount nights for concessions?
So again, I'll deal with the second part of that question first, because we've done a few things this year. We did a Swedish meatball specialty when Eric Carlson came back. And we've done
Dollar Dogs.
At the Boston game that just passed on Sunday, we did Dollar Dogs. And we're looking at potentially introducing a cookie special to commemorate or pay homage to our pregame cookie eater, Brady. kind of introducing a cookies and milk type promo for, I've called them kachookies, but I don't know if that's going to get any traction.
Oh, nice.
Because some people on the team don't like that name, but I'm putting it on the internet now, so you guys have to support me.
It's on the internet, so it's true.
we are doing some of those promos, and yes, we are looking at doing more of those as the season goes on. When it comes to the actual like food and beverage mix, that's something that is an ongoing issue in our building. And by I mean we're always kind of looking at what we can do to tweak it. We have some areas of the building that perform, and from a food and beverage, they perform really well. Some areas that perform less well. So obviously we always want to be improving kind of those bottom performers. So that's number one. Number two, on, you know, if you go, brands are absolutely a possibility. I mean, we have brands in our building now. We have Fat Boys, and we have Farm Boy, and we have Smokes Poutinerie.
Golden Palace.
And Golden, oh yes, of course, Golden Palace is what I eat for dinner most game nights.
It's apparently what we get for free.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you get, doesn't they, we send them to your house now, don't
yes,
we?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 that's what I heard. So yeah, so there are, I mean, to suggest that brands wouldn't be part of or would be outside of the consideration, just there's no proof of that. But that being said, you know, we also have, we don't control 100% of our food and beverage in the sense that we do have a great partner, Aramark, that they supply or they produce or they, I don't even know the right word for it. They undertake the food and beverage operations in our building. So it's not something, you know, we need to make sense. We need to work with them to make sure they're very flexible. They kind of will come to the table with lots of suggestions. And anytime we have a crazy suggestion like Swedish meatballs, they are happy to help us get that done. But yeah, it's something that should always be evolving, in my opinion. We should always be looking at changing things. And I can tell you, you know, there is one restaurant on the 100 level right now that is definitely being discussed as a change. That's all I'll say.
Pretty cool. And a suggestion for whenever Jean-Gabriel Pageau comes back, perhaps a chicken parm.
Yeah. Chicken parm. Yeah. I think...
After that game, I believe the next game, they had chicken parm sandwiches as like a special feature. Yeah. So they do... Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't know when that is right now. Right.
Not soon enough.
But when we have any insight into when that might be, then yeah.
There you go. Great. Last question.
Cool.
Again, thank you very much for your time with this.
Oh, this is great.
You've mentioned
I do this every week. I'm just
maybe
kidding.
Not every week. No, that's why even we don't do this every week. So you mentioned you've been to Tampa and to Florida.
Yeah.
Those are the only two that you've
been to? No, so those are the teams that I saw this year with my new kind of chief marketing officer of the Ottawa Senators lens, which obviously makes me pay more attention to things that I might not have before. But I, as a fan, I've been to a game, the Islanders, when they were playing in Brooklyn. They've changed their location now, but I was at an Islander game. I grew up as a Detroit Red Wings fan, so... I've been to the Joe Louis Arena, and they also have a new facility that I haven't been in yet. I've also gone to a Chicago Blackhawks game, so I've been in that building. And I think that probably covers it. So I've been to about five different and then I also know, just from having talked to their organizations, a little bit about the Nashville game, like the Nashville experience, as well as the Vegas experience, the San Jose experience. So I know a little bit about it, but I can't say I've been there, so I don't know firsthand. But yeah, Tampa Bay was incredible. And Florida was also super interesting, but I mean, if I can be like, if I can make the Ottawa Senators like Tampa Bay, like mic drop, I'm out of here. Like I will have done my job. Mm-hmm. They have a great organization. They were super happy to sit down with me. They gave me a tour. They talked about kind of some of their transition going through a period of kind of leaner times into a time where they were changing things in their market. You know, they have a tough job. They're in Florida. We're in a Canadian market. Like I view that as a huge opportunity. I don't have to convince people who don't have a background in hockey to kind of buy into hockey. And yet they've done it so beautifully. They do have a Canadian base there, obviously, in Florida that they play off of. So, awesome organization, smart thinking, lots of things that I've tried to kind of emulate and probably fallen short, but you know, as I move on through more and more, as Emily and I progress together for the game experience, from promotions to some of the marketing that they're doing, like I really, I use them definitely as a measuring stick.
So one thing that really stands out to me in Tampa is their monitors, or the Jumbotron.
The Jumbotron, yeah.
That, is there any chance of us getting a new one?
Sure, there's always a chance. I don't have any say in that particular decision. Yeah, there's always a chance, but I don't know how the current one is. How old? It's 10 years old.
There's All-Star Game, which was 2013.
Oh, so it's not even 5 years old.
Yeah, it's not super old. We did,
And I think that's a lease one also. Just break them. I think it's a lease. Right,
no, we don't.
Oh, it's owned?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, I would probably suggest that falls under the same kind of like gray area of are we staying, are we going?
Like, I don't think it's at the top of our shopping list.
Yeah, it's not at the top of our shopping list. On Ice Projection would be at the top of our shopping list. So yeah, we have some other upgrades that we can do that would probably take precedence over a new. I always call it the Jumbotron, and Emily always tells me it's not
the Bell HD screen.
It's the Bell HD screen. I know. I say it now just to bug her.
Oh, Amy and Emily, thanks very much for giving this opportunity and to ask our questions of you. How can people get a hold of you if you'd like that?
Oh, how can they get a hold of us? No, that's a really good question. Well, I mean, I'm happy to give my email address. It's Daisiel, DEZIELA, Daisiela, at OttawaSenators.com. So that's definitely probably the preferred way to get in touch with me.
Yeah, my email is knighte@OttawaSenators.com.
KNIGHTE. Yes.
Oh, you got away with it.
I'm happy to... And, you know, like, I'm happy to do... I think the main piece of what I'm really excited about, and I think this has to do with even how we've all come together, is I want a dialogue. You know, you may not always tell me things I want to hear. I may not always tell you things you want to hear. But if we're at least chatting, mm-hmm. we can get a better appreciation for why you think what you do, why I think what I do, how things come to be. You know, it's a lot about what we're doing here, right here. And if we're not talking, then we're not really getting anywhere. We're just kind of, you know, we're in a vacuum. We're all in our own individual vacuums with no additional input. So I really am engaged in that. I won't buy into everyone's opinion and or everyone's idea right off the bat. But I mean, I'm always going to listen, and I'm always going to have an honest evaluation of ideas or contacts or, you know, ways that we can improve. And again, it's just a matter of kind of, do they fit with the brand, and in what timeline could we do them? And, you know, we get a lot of suggestions, and it's unrealistic to think that we could implement all of them all at once, right? We've got to make strategic decisions. And so as long as people are a little bit kind of knowledgeable or patient with that, we're open for it. We're open to talking.
Awesome. So I'm Cardinal, and
no, you're not.
No, I'm Canuck. See, that's what he used to do. Didn't he do that?
Cardinal's sick.
Yeah, Cardinal's sick. So I'm saying this on behalf of Cardinal. I'm
allegedly.
Canuck.
I actually really like Cardinal. I feel bad, Cardinal. I hope you feel better.
Yeah, he'll be back.
I don't.
If you want to get a hold of us, you can email the podcast at podcast@sendscollops.com. We're on Twitter @sendscollops, or you can even phone us and leave a message on our what we call our Versature waiver wire at 1-844-SCU-SENDS. Thanks again, and look forward to next week.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
See you next week.